This is Audible.
Preppy. The Life and Death of Samuel Clearwater, Part 2. King Series, Book 6. Written by T.M. Frazier. Narrated by Kirsten Lee and Lance Greenfield at Brickshop Audio, Inc. Prologue. Preppy. There's this light in the distance. It's bright, burning, and blinding as fucking hell. It's just out of my grasp. A whisper away. I can talk about it. I can think about it, but it's almost like it's not real. Like it's not really fucking there. And it drives me insane because all I can think about is reaching for it. Reaching for you. Because as my letter said, you are my light when I'm surrounded by nothing but dark. I try to ignore it. The echoes of my name being called between time and space because fuck death. Fuck anything that tries to keep me from finding my way back to you. If and when I'm liberated from the shackles that keep me tethered to the gates of hell, have no doubt, I'm coming for you, Doc. Because you are what has kept me alive all these months. Kept me wanting to be alive. Which is fucking hard sometimes because when death calls out to me, he sounds like an old friend offering comforts that would be so fucking easy to take. But you know me. Probably better than anyone, and I've never been a man to take the easy route. Maybe that's why I've chosen instead to take the road back to you. To the us. The Reaper came for me, and he demanded that I take his hand, and he told me he was my friend, my companion in death. I couldn't help myself when I laughed in that fucker's face and told him his sister gives good head. Luckily, he sent me right back across the river on my merry fucking way. Back to life. Back to possibility. A long time ago, when I was just a skinny little nothing being beaten up by a bully in the schoolyard, I met someone who defended me when no one else would. We made a plan to be our own bosses that very day. It didn't matter that we were just kids because we meant it then, and I mean it just as much right fucking now. Which is why, when faced with the fucking end of my life, I spit in the Reaper's face. Because my name is Samuel Clearwater, and I take orders from no one. Not even death.
Chapter 1. Dre. "What does he mean by that?" Ray asked, coming over to stand next to me at Preppy's bedside. After his sudden outburst, he'd passed back out, leaving me more disoriented than when I'd walked in the door to find him alive. "Why did he call you his wife?" I shook my head. I'm not really sure," I answered, not able to focus on her question, still consumed with the fact that Preppy was alive, battered and looking nothing like his former self, but alive.
"It was probably just nonsense," Bear said from the doorway. "He's been muttering a bit over the past few days. One of the doctors thinks it's a sign that his body's healed enough to start fighting his way out of the coma. He said it might still be a few weeks, but it's a decent sign."
"Yeah, but those other two quacks think it could just be reflexes, and it don't mean shit,"
King added, looking every bit skeptical. How is this even possible?" I asked, covering my open mouth with my hand. I leaned over his body like I was checking to see if he was real, or if my teary eyes were deceiving me. His chest rose and fell, and it sounded like the most beautiful music I'd ever heard. Ray paused as she was about to answer, like she was considering my presence with a new kind of skepticism. She stared hard at where my hand was touching Preppy. Apparently, she was the only one who questioned my intentions, because the other three that were with her had disappeared from the doorway, leaving the two of us in the room alone. Not alone. With Preppy. I squeezed his hand and let out a sigh of relief, sending out a few thank yous into the universe along with a few choked sobs. Ray looked at the floor and shuffled her feet. She crossed her arms over her chest. He was here the whole time. In Logan's Beach. She said, like she couldn't believe it herself. I gasped. Why? How? We don't know the details. Just that he was being held close by and that the guy who was holding him must have had a lot of people in his pocket to make us all believe he was dead. What did the police say? It dawned on me how stupid my question must have sounded when Ray cocked her head to the side. How well do you know Preppy? Well enough to know it was idiotic of me to ask about police involvement. I flashed her a tight-lipped smile. Ray nodded as if I answered correctly. King and Bear are on it. They're not trusting anyone to look into it but themselves. They've been up most nights until the sun comes up, going over theories and retracing everyone's steps to find out who else could have been involved. She pointed to Preppy. But only he knows what happened down there. And there isn't any way a single second of it was something good. The only thing we know is that he's lucky to be alive. We are all so lucky that he's alive. Yes. Yes, we are. I agreed, turning my attentions back to Preppy, whose eyebrows were pointing in toward the middle of his face in a sharp V, as if he were having some nightmare he couldn't escape. You said you were a good friend of his? Ray asked again, like she needed more clarification than what I'd given her. That makes two of us. We met a long time ago, I said, not knowing what the right answer was. I had no clue what we had been, only what we didn't become. Preppy saved my life once, I told her for the sake of giving her something about my connection to Preppy. More than once. I laughed and wiped a fallen tear from my cheek. Preppy suddenly sat up with a startled roar. His arms shot out, and before I could swallow down the frightened sob threatening to escape from my mouth, his hands were wrapped tightly around my throat, squeezing, squeezing until I saw stars, and my windpipe was closing under the power of his relentless hold. The pressure behind my eyes was building, until it felt like they were going to pop from my head. I felt the blood vessels exploding in anger under his relentless hold. I couldn't even scream. Preppy pushed me roughly. My shoulder blade stung as I crashed into the wall. A colorful plastic clock fell from its nail and bounced off the top of my head before falling to the floor. An eerie rendition of Someday My Prince Will Come played slowly from the clock as Preppy stared intensely into my eyes, with all the cords in his neck taut and his teeth gnashed together. I searched his eyes for some flash of recognition, but it wasn't there. I knew by the deadened look in his eyes that it wasn't me he saw. To him, I wasn't even there. He squeezed my throat tighter. His hips pinned me in place. I grew weaker and weaker by the second. There was no fighting back. There was no way to win. I was going to die. And if I could have laughed at that moment, I would have, because my final thought was that at least I got to see Preppy before my death, even if he was the one killing me. Using his grip around my throat as if his hand were a collar and his arm were my leash, he lifted me off the wall, and for a second I felt as if he were going to let me go. Instead, he slammed me back harder. This time it was a shelf of coloring books that rained down on us. There was more shouting, an inaudible legion of voices, both male and female, but they started to fade just as quickly as it came. Suddenly, the pressure around my neck was gone, and I dropped to the floor, gasping for air I couldn't seem to find. The shallow breaths I did manage hurt like someone set fire to my throat. It was shitty breathing. But at least I was breathing. My vision slowly returned, and the voices that seemed so far away only moments ago were now right in front of me. King and Bear had Preppy by the shoulders. They hauled him against the opposite wall toward the bed. He screamed, loud and awful. The sound shot right through me. It wasn't until they wrestled him back onto the bed when he spoke actual words. "Motherfuckers, get off me! I can't! I can't!" His screams turned into sobs, and I watched as his resistance slowly left his body. His eyes rolled back in his head, and his body went limp. After only a few seconds, his chest began to rise and fall steadily, and he became a passed-out pile of thin limbs, hanging off the mattress. The second I knew he was safe, I darted from the room, my hands wrapped around my injured throat. I bolted out the front door, temporarily blinded by the sunlight and by him. "Wait!" Ray called from behind me, but I didn't stop. One foot in front of the other until I was in the car and speeding down the road at twice the legal limit. I pulled over into the first parking lot I came across, a drugstore. I killed the engine and dropped my head onto the steering wheel. Sobs escaped me. Cries of both relief and confusion erupted from me like a volcano of pent-up emotion. After sitting there in the car for what seemed like only minutes, I finally gathered myself together enough to be able to sit up straight and check the clock. Nope, not a few minutes, a few hours. I wiped the tears from my cheeks with my fingers. Then, out of nowhere, as if I had no control over my emotions or reactions, I started to laugh. Preppy was alive. He was alive. My laugh grew louder, manic, a high-pitched cackle even I didn't recognize. The entire situation was unbelievable, unreal even, absurd, surreal, beautiful, a fucking miracle. So much for closure. Chapter 2, Dre. I stood on Myrna's driveway and inhaled deeply, taking in all the smells that I'd missed over the past few years. The salty water from the Gulf of Mexico in the not-too-far distance, the oranges from the dozen or so groves one town over, and the mouth-watering scent of barbecue that I could practically taste in the air from a nearby roadside pit. All the smells of Logan's Beach. All the smells of home. But it felt off, like the sky shouldn't have been so blue. There shouldn't have been any picture-perfect white fluffy clouds floating across it either. It felt wrong that stoplight still changed from red to green and back again, and that kids on rusted bikes chased the ice cream truck down the street, the broken speakers playing a haunting version of a typically upbeat tune. Don't even get me started on the fucking church bells. The funny thing about life is that even though something entirely earth-shattering rocks you to your core, something that shakes you off your axis, the world around you somehow doesn't feel the impact, or it doesn't give a shit. Meanwhile, there I stood, out in the blazing sunlight on the most beautiful midsummer day, waiting to be hit by the meteor that killed the dinosaurs. I was on edge, twitching like it hadn't been years since I gave in to my heroin cravings. I loved everything about Logan's Beach, but couldn't bring myself to enjoy it. Almost like I felt guilty that I could smell these amazing things while Preppy couldn't. Not now, in that bed. And probably not from wherever he'd been for the last year. I had to put an end to my thoughts before they got ahead of me. Closing my eyes tightly, I shook off the thousands of bad things running through my mind. Two little kids chose that moment to zip down the street laughing like rabid hyenas. One was on a bike, towing the other who was sitting on a skateboard. They reminded me of how much fun I used to have with my stepsister when I was younger. I gave them my best mental middle finger. Not because they deserved it, of course, but because I had no idea how to put one foot in front of the other, and they were having the time of their lives. Maybe I should hang out with them. I guess it was a good thing the world went on, because if it paused to match what was going around inside of me, it would have looked a lot less like blue sky and bicycles and a lot more like zombie and apocalypse. Focus, Dre, I chastised myself. You have to focus. For Dad.
Hey, Dre, are you in there?
Brandon asked, waving his hand an inch in front of my face.
He totally zoned out on me.
I slapped it away and he laughed. Sorry, I'm a little preoccupied.
We don't have to do this today, Brandon said. It sounded like what happened was rough. Anyone would be struggling right now. You don't have to...
No, I need to do this. I need to do something to occupy my mind or I'll go crazy wondering about... I paused, bouncing from foot to foot.
Him.
Brandon finished for me. He always knew what I was about to say and never let me get away with my instinct to keep things bottled up inside.
You're wondering where you go from here, right? Now that he's alive?
There was no judgment in his voice, only concern. I shook my head. No, I mean, yes. Brandon rolled his eyes and turned me by the shoulders to face him. He waved his fingers in a hit-me-with-it motion, and I knew he meant for me to continue because it was what he always did when I was stubborn with my words. I took a deep breath. I thought that, yes, I don't know where to go from here, but the truth is that I don't know if he's going to recover just yet. The doctors don't even know. So a part of me doesn't want to think of him as alive just yet because it could all change again. My voice cracked and my eyes fell to the gravel.
Hey, look up here,
Brandon said, taking my chin and directing my gaze back up at him.
Keep going.
And even if he does, I cleared my throat. Survive? It doesn't change anything. He still drove me away. He still said things and did things to purposely hurt me because he didn't want me.
But he did want you. He wrote you that letter, and that was years after you left.
Yes, but that was still a year ago now. And Preppy's been through God knows what life-changing situation. And even if all of that wasn't a factor, there is still one gigantic reason why we both know it wouldn't end with roses and sunshine. So can we please get back to talking about the house now? I asked, smiling in a ridiculously awkward way that exposed both my upper and lower teeth and made my face look like it got caught in a wind tunnel.
Fine, but this isn't over. We're still going to talk about it,
Brandon said, pinching my cheek to turn my face back to normal. Promise? I asked sarcastically.
Smartass,
he mumbled. Brandon tipped his chin to the house.
You know, your dad didn't ask you to do this,
he pointed out.
And I'm pretty sure he'd be pissed if he found out.
Well then, we won't tell him, now will we?
I thought part of your N.A. thing was no lies.
It's not like I'm telling him I'm taking his car for a ride to the mall when in reality I'm planning to trade it into a chop shop for a day's worth of dope. It's not like I'm even lying. I'm simply omitting the truth for his benefit. Not to his detriment.
Whatever lets you sleep at night,
Brandon said, rolling his eyes dramatically. He pushed the sleeves of his button-down shirt up his forearms.
Be sure to run it by your sponsor, Andrea. I think she'll have something to say about the logic you've concocted on that one.
You leave Edna out of this, I jokingly warned, wagging my finger at him. I shielded my eyes from the sun as I turned from Brandon to look up lovingly at someone else I love. Someone much older, showing a lot more wear and tear. Myrna's house. And because Preppy stuck to his word, my house. My heart skipped a beat like I was on a first date. Immediately, I spotted the lines on the front porch post where my grandfather used to mark my height as a kid, and the crooked light on the side of the house that became that way when I was testing out an archery set my grandma had gotten me for my birthday one year. I even loved the way all the trees in the front of the house leaned to the left, the result of a hurricane that hit the summer I was 9. My old friend was in need of some repair, having sat neglected for a few years. But she was still beautiful to me. She always would be. Even if she won't be mine for much longer. The step on the porch, the one I'd fixed before, was warped again. This time it was the other side curving upwards in a wing-like position, as if it was about to take flight. The roof had lost a lot of shingles, leaving blotchy patches of faded tar paper peeking out from underneath. The entire house was like another character in the story of my life. An important one. All through rehab, getting my GED, Going to the local community college, I'd always had this idea. A plan to move to Logan's Beach permanently after I graduated. I'd fix up the house and make it a place I could be proud of, in a town that I could never quite shake. For better or worse, Logan's Beach was a part of me. A place where my life almost ended, and where it almost just began. However, if I learned anything about life post-rehab, it's that plans change, and you must learn to adapt. First order of adjusting? Sell the house to help Dad.
You've always talked about how much you love this place,
Brandon said with his nose wrinkled as he looked it over, like he couldn't understand the appeal in a shaggy old cottage on a forgotten road, in the middle of a little town with two streetlights and three stop signs. I do love this place, I argued. But I love my dad more. Selling it is the least I can do for him.
Dre, it's not your fault that his business isn't doing great,
Brandon pointed out.
He owns a bookstore when the world has shifted to buying books online through bookazon.com.
I know. But it is my fault he took out a second mortgage to send me to rehab and a personal loan to send me to school. He brought Myrna up to live by us in a facility that cost a lot more and took on all of her expenses because I wanted to be close to her in her final days. It's because of me that he's swimming in debt. I may not be the reason his business is failing, but I am the reason he's losing his house, I said, choking up when I thought about all the pain my addiction and my lies and my lack of giving a shit had caused him through the years. Brandon raised an eyebrow at me and tucked his thumbs into his belt. He glanced at the house, then back to me, looking confused and out of place. Sweat stains formed around the collar of his white dress shirt, the material too thick for the wet heat of southern Florida. The humidity caused his usually tame dark hair to jut out from his head at every available angle. His overly tan skin stood out against his crisp white dress shirt, which he pulled from the waistband of his pants, fanning it up and down to trap air underneath. If I watched him much longer, I was pretty sure he was going to melt right there on the driveway. I walked over to the porch and tested the first warped step with my sneaker, and it disintegrated into crumbles under the tiniest bit of pressure. My dad needs my help. He just won't ask for it. You know how stubborn he is. You used to work for him. Besides, he still sees me as a kid. As an addict, he doesn't want to put any pressure on me. I tested two more steps, which held up slightly better than the one that turned to wood dust. I think he's afraid of pushing me over the edge again. I hopped down the steps and walked over to the garage. I ran my hand over the single bay garage door, leaving a streak in the dust coating it. Remembering all the things my grandfather taught me inside that garage, painting, welding, drilling.
Your dad loves you,
Brandon said as I joined him back on the porch. He followed my lead carefully up the steps, only placing his foot where mine had just proved we wouldn't go crashing down into the crawl space underneath. I know, and I love my dad. That's why I'm doing this. And if it wasn't for the past due notices I found shoved into a drawer in his kitchen and the lawsuit from the mortgage company in his desk, I still wouldn't know he was losing his house.
But still, this house is special to you. You look like you're going to make out with it, for fuck's sake,
Brandon said with a laugh. I don't know about the making out part, I said, returning his smile. But it is special to me. It always will be, I admitted. But if I'd known earlier what Dad was going through, I would have sold it a lot sooner. He should never have...
Stop, Dre. You needed rehab. You needed to get your ass in school. Your dad did the right thing by you. He didn't tell you because he didn't want you to worry. I thought you were done blaming yourself. Isn't that another one of your NA things?
Brandon tugged me into his side and gave me a quick kiss on the head before releasing me. Brandon and I didn't have any secrets. He knew all my dark and dirty, and I knew all of his. Although... cheating on a test in sixth grade is about as dark and dirty as Brandon had ever gotten. Thanks, Squeaky, I said, using my nickname for him, It stood for squeaky clean. I'm always working on it. I took my time opening the front door, remembering the way Myrna always used to be on the other side of it, to greet me with a smile, and her famous cookies. It felt wrong that she wasn't around, in the house or in the world. Myrna died 6 months earlier.
Well, if you're adamant about this sale, then I insist on helping you fix this place up,
Brandon said, smoothing his brown hair back with both hands. He unbuttoned his shirt, revealing more sweat soaking the white tank top underneath.
What do you need me to do?
I cocked an eyebrow at him. You? Help? What do you know about fixing up a house?
Not a damn thing,
he admitted with a laugh, his dark gray eyes lighting up with amusement. His big smile showed off more bright white teeth than should be able to fit in one mouth.
But you know all about this stuff. And you can teach me. I'm a quick learner. Besides, what did you think I came all the way down here for?
Because my dad asked you to babysit me? I answered honestly.
No, for moral support and handyman services, Brandon said.
I tried to contain my laugh. The last thing handy I saw Brandon attempt was when he hung a picture. Within 3 minutes, it fell off the wall. I rehung it. The house was going to need a lot of work to bring it up to sellable condition, but time wasn't on my side. I could use any hand offered, and right then, Brandon was the only hand offering.
All right, Brandon, let's go then. I'm Tim the Toolman, and you're Al.
Why do I have to be Al?
Brandon whined. He wears plaid. More facial hair, I joked, but my smile quickly fell the second I entered the living room, and a powerful sense of deja vu I'd ever experienced slammed into me. Then the memories came back to me one by one like I was experiencing them all over again. Sitting in the living room trying to con my grandmother, running from a spray of Preppy's bullets into the woods, meditating with Myrna in the backyard, and sleeping with Preppy's body wrapped around mine in my little bed. Chills danced up my spine. Just as I got to the kitchen and another round of memories took shape in my mind, a throat cleared from behind us. I jumped around to find Ray standing in the doorway. Her long blonde hair was stick straight. The breeze blowing through the porch made it so she had to keep tucking the wayward strands behind her ears. She wore a simple white tank top and a pair of cut-off denim shorts. A baby, no more than 6 months old, bounced on Ray's hip, dressed in all pink. The little one shared the same bright blue eyes as Ray. My heart squeezed when the baby giggled, pulling on a crown necklace Ray wore around her neck.
Hi, Ray, come on in, I said, and then my thoughts immediately went to Preppy.
Is everything okay? I tried not to let my sudden sense of panic seep into my voice.
Yeah, everything's fine. I just wanted to come by and say that I'm sorry about what happened this morning with Preppy, Ray said, looking around the empty living room while bouncing the giggling baby.
It's not your fault. It's nobody's fault, I said.
Wait, how did you know where I was?
Small town. Just gotta throw a rock in the right direction.
Hi, I'm Brandon,
Brandon said, introducing himself and extending his hand to Ray.
Hi, so great to meet you, Brandon, Ray said. I'm Ray, and this here is little Nicole Grace.
Oh, like after Grace, Grace? I asked as Brandon and Ray shook hands. Ray cocked her head to the side.
Yeah, like the one and only, she said, covering her suspicious reaction with another smile.
Well, nice to meet you, Nicole Grace.
Brandon cooed in his best baby voice. He shook the baby's hand with his thumb.
I'm so sorry. I should have introduced the two of you, I apologized. I just got a lot on my mind right now, and it seems that my manners didn't make the list.
No worries, Ray said, taking a stroll about the room, checking out the bare walls and low-hanging wood beams that ran across the ceiling.
I saw the for sale sign in the car. Is this your place? You're selling it?
I nodded. It used to be my grandmother's. I rocked back on my heels with my hands in my back pockets, happy to be back in the house, even if it was just for a short while. It's beautiful, Ray said, admiring the view of the backyard through the filthy kitchen window. Even though the place was in shambles, I believed her compliment was genuine, because she was looking around like she could see the house for the place it could be again, and not the place it was. I'll keep my ears open, and if I hear about anyone who's looking to buy, I'll send them your way, she offered. Well, then I'll give you the grand tour, so you know what you'll be sending them to, I said, leading the way down the hall. Ray followed close behind. Although I will warn you, the house isn't super big, so it's going to be a very short tour. Ray laughed, and so did the baby.
I'll go get the rest of the stuff out of the car, Brandon said, heading out the front door.
My grandfather built this house, I said. It's 3 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms, although I know it doesn't look it from the outside. I opened the first hallway door. This used to be my room. Ray peeked her head inside, and I shut the door again. There would be plenty of time for me to sit and stare at the strawberry wallpaper and faded yellow curtains, and I didn't want to break out in tears in front of my guest. You used to live here too? Ray asked. Only during the summers when I was a kid. This visit is the first time I've been here in years, though. I showed her the bathroom in the hallway and Myrna's old room before opening the door at the end of the hall. The mechanics of the former grow house might have been long gone, but the signs that it was once there were all around. The hooks in the ceiling, the nails in the walls where the pipes were connected. So that's how you know Preppy, Ray lamented, taking a look around the room. Yeah, sort of, I admitted. When you came to the house, you really didn't know Preppy was alive, did you? Ray asked. It was the shock of a lifetime, I admitted. I still can't believe it. I closed the door and led us back out to the kitchen. I touched my hand to my throat, feeling the swollen markings left by Preppy's hands. I opened the sliding glass door to the backyard. Between the boards of the faded wooden deck, weeds grew from underneath, creating huge gaps between the panels. The lawn where Myrna taught me to meditate was grown over, having merged with the field behind it at some point. A train whistled in the distance. Well, Ray said, mulling over my answer. She set the baby in front of her on the counter and smiled down at the adorable chubby-cheeked infant. That was one hell of a tour. I looked down at the baby, who had stuck one of Ray's fingers in her mouth and was gnawing away on it with her gums. May I? I asked, hesitantly, holding out my arms. Oh, of course, Ray said, picking Nicole Grace off the counter and setting her in my arms. My chest constricted, and I felt as if I couldn't breathe. She was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. You must just stare at her all day long, right? I asked as I cradled the little girl in my arms. Yes, her daddy too. We're tired, but it's totally worth it, Ray said. They all are. She pushed back a tiny lock of baby soft hair from Nicole's little head. Do you have any? I shook my head. No, I learned a while back that I can't have kids. I'm sorry, Ray offered. She must have sensed that I didn't want to talk about it anymore because she quickly changed the subject. I've got a few errands to run now, Ray said. But how about we get together later on this afternoon, after I pick up the kids from school and drop them off with King? We can have ourselves some girl talk. I only have Thea, Bear's old lady, and she's pregnant. I can't tell you how tired I am of talking about diaper genies and boppy pillows. That sounds great, I said. You need any help with all this? Ray asked, looking around the house to the peeling wallpaper and cracked drywall. King and Bear are about as handy, and they come. And Bear has an arsenal of guys that would be willing to help for as little as a few beers. I reluctantly handed Ray back her baby and walked them out the open front door. Ray carefully navigated her way down the rickety front steps. I glanced over at my helper, who was still struggling to get the for sale sign out of the hatchback of the rental car. You know, Ray, I might just take you up on that, I said with a smile that she returned. Good, because that boy over there is cute and all, but he looks like the type that wouldn't know a hammer if it fell from a shelf and smacked him on top of the head. Unfortunately, that's very true, Brandon huffed after finally freeing the sign. The collar and armpits of his dress shirt were saturated with dark circles of perspiration. Oh, shit, I almost forgot the main reason I stopped over. I swear these little ones give me the biggest case of mom brain sometimes, Ray said, speed-walking over to the old Ford truck, parked on the edge of the lawn. She reached in through the open window of the passenger seat and returned with a folded piece of paper. I was thinking about what Preppy said earlier, the thing about you being his wife. It was just something he said in confusion. I repeated the same reasoning I'd given her that morning. No, I don't think that's it, Ray argued, unfolding the page and handing it to me. It was a photocopy of the marriage certificate I'd made for Preppy. I shook my head. No, you don't understand. This paper is just something I made up. It's a fake. All the signatures, the witnesses, all forged, I explained, pulling the paper down from my face to find Ray staring back at me like she was not convinced. It was something Preppy needed when he was trying to get custody of King's daughter. It's not even real. There was no wedding, no minister, no nothing. It's not real. I repeated the same words in an effort to get my point across. Ray tapped the spot on the lower right corner of the page over the official county stamp, one that would be raised on the original. It wasn't something I put there. Ray continued. I got this copy from the county clerk's office this morning, she said. And according to them, it's very, very real. Shit, I swore, turning the page around like it could tell me something more by inspecting the blank side. That makes us, in the eyes of the state of Florida, married. Ray finished for me, flashing me a wink. Congratulations, Dre. You're Mrs. Samuel Clearwater.
Chapter 3. Preppy. A thousand hopeful whispers breathed over my body. Little bursts of air peppered my skin as someone gently lifted my arm and two fingers pressed firmly on the inside of my wrist. I was tucked and untucked in various stages of cocooning, wrapped in unfamiliar softness. The air around me was fresh and light, with none of the sticky dampness I'd become used to clinging to the inside of my throat and lungs. The kind of wet air that threatened to choke me with the thick stench of mildew and decay. The sound of heavy rain pelting against a window overhead rang in my eardrums. A clap of thunder boomed, rattling my aching bones. A burst of bright lightning immediately followed, flashing in front of my closed eyelids as if it was somehow announcing my new semi-conscious state to the world. Or maybe just me.
Look, his eyes are fluttering again, a female voice stated. This could be it.
For a second, I envisioned the dark-haired girl with black eyes and red lips. The one I thought about so often, I started to question if she was even ever real or just part of a fantasy I'd created to pass the time. But when the voice kept talking, the image of my girl faded and recognition took hold. Doe. My adrenaline surged as well as the immediate need to get the fuck up and join the world around me. The world I'd missed with every cell of my fucking being, and the one I never thought I'd have the pleasure of existing in again. It was like it was Friday night, and all my friends were going out to do something balls to the walls amazing. And I had to stay home and hear all about it in the morning, feeling shitty and left out. It was like an extended night out, except with ass rape and constant beatings. Either way, there was a lot of catching up to do. But then I remembered that all wasn't always what it seemed. I paused and took a brief second to remind myself that what I was feeling, The voice I was hearing, it could be a product of my imagination just like all the times before. That the likelihood of no one being there when I opened my eyes, or that it would be the fucking devil himself, was much greater than the possibility of being my friend. I could be dead. Or it could all be some sort of fucked up hallucination. Someone squeezed my arm. If it was the devil, he had tiny hands and used moisturizer. But it wasn't. The gesture was gentle, friendly, reassuring. Nope, not the devil. Although that simple touch felt as if all the bones in my fingers were being crushed, it was also the greatest fucking pain I'd ever experienced, because it told me that it all might be real. I tried to open my eyes, but it was like prying apart a frozen sandwich with your bare hands. All I could see were colors dancing behind my lids like a light show taking place behind a screen. When I attempted to speak, I choked on my own saliva, and for what seemed like a span of forever, a stream of erratic coughs was the only response I could muster.
"Maybe he's not ready yet,"
an unfamiliar female voice chimed in.
"He might just need more time."
"No,"
Doe argued.
"I know he's coming around. I just know he is. I can feel it. He can hear us. It's different now."
Her voice was confident, albeit desperate, like she was trying to convince herself as well as whoever it was she was talking to.
"Have you two considered the possibility that he's just being a fucking pussy?"
King boomed. There was no mistaking his voice. The fucker sounded louder than thunder amongst a drizzle of rain.
"Maybe he's fucking with us. I wouldn't put it past him. Shit, he could have been up for days already, but he just wants us to wipe his ass some more."
"Shh," was the response. I wanted to smile, to laugh, but nothing I wanted to do, things that were easy before, was happening. What used to be a natural reflex, something I never had to so much as think about, was now a massive struggle to will my muddled brain and somewhat useless body to get together and make the SS Preppy functional again.
"Fuck that shit, I'm not gonna be quiet. This isn't a fucking library. We're hoping he wakes the fuck up, so let's wake him the fuck up. He likes the attention, you know that. Miss Priss over here isn't going to open his eyes and grace us with his presence until he knows he's got all our fucking attention."
There was a pause, and then I felt King's breath over my forehead as he leaned in close. His shadow fell over the light as he spoke to me just inches from my nose.
"We're all here. You can cut the shit now, Prep."
"Stop," I started, barely scratching out the word. The room felt silent except for a few gasps. I felt like someone took a tiny sharp rake and ran it down the inside of my throat. I wet my lips with my tongue and started again.
"St—"
King leaned in even closer until his chest was against mine.
"What was that, Prep?"
His facial hair bristled against the bridge of my nose. "Stop." My eyes finally cooperated and opened slightly, although it still felt as if they were being held together with superglue. Prying them apart was like pulling my eyelashes out by the fucking roots. I peered through a blurry slit and found myself staring at the top of King's dark head of hair. Motherfucker was trying to cuddle with me. It was fucking adorable.
"Prep, try again. We can hear you, but we can't understand you. Speak louder,"
he demanded, enunciating each word as if I was deaf and dumb. The volume of his voice kept changing between a muted tone and a megaphone blast. He leaned down even closer until I was positive he was trying to lay down on my fucking face and his ear was against my lips.
"Stop trying to make out with me,"
I finally managed to say. "I'm not into facial hair." King stood straight, and I felt the immediate relief that his body was no longer crushing me. He leaned over me with a satisfied shit-eating grin on his ugly-ass face. Doe was on his left with tears in her big, icy blue eyes. The girl I didn't recognize was obscured from my view. She took a step back to allow King and Doe more space next to the bed.
"Took you fucking long enough,"
King said, looking like a proud parent whose kid just said its first words.
"We've missed you,"
Doe added as my eyelids grew heavy again. It was a struggle to keep them open, but there was no way I was closing them so quickly after finally getting a look at two of the people I never thought I'd see again.
So much.
King tucked her into his side and kissed her on the top of the head.
Is there anything we can get you?
Doe asked, wiping the moisture from under her eye with her pinky. Yeah, I answered, turning my head to the side so I could see them better. A sensation like a million electrical wires misfiring at the same time sent jolts of pain down my spine. Before I could stop it, I let out a strangled cry.
What's wrong? Do you need the doctor? Tell me what you need, Prep.
Doe demanded, sounding panicked. She placed a hand on my shoulder, and it felt like she stuck a hot branding iron into my skin. No, I said, clearing my throat. But there are some things I do need. Doe darted from the room and came back seconds later with a mini pink Barbie notebook and matching pen.
Go ahead,
she said. She turned the page of the notebook and clicked the back of the pen. It made a cheering sound. King knowingly gazed down at me like he knew what I was up to. It was a great look. It told me that no matter how much time had passed, he still knew I was an asshole. I was fucking home. I kept my eyes trained on King while I dictated my list to Doe. You ready? I asked. She nodded. Okay. I'm gonna need some blow. The good shit, not the kind you get from that dick over in Harper's Ridge. Strippers, of course. No less than C-cups, and they have to be open to all things anal. I thought about it for a moment. Okay, that would make them hookers. Scratch strippers and insert hookers. I need the blood of a virgin goat. 3 bottles of vintage Mexican tequila with the worms still intact. I glanced at Doe, whose pen wasn't moving over the page. She raised her eyebrows and lowered her pen to glare at me over the multicolored notebook. Tears streamed down her face.
I've missed you so much,
she sputtered. Dropping the pen and Barbie book on the floor, she threw her tiny body on top of mine in a long, tight hug. She buried her face in my neck, and I felt her hot tears burning against my skin as they poured from her eyes. I ignored the blood-curdling pain radiating from my muscles. I even resisted the urge to scream or even flinch, because I didn't want to scare her away. Missed you too, kid, I whispered. We stayed there, wrapped in our one-sided hug for a long while until King cleared his throat, and Doe lifted her head from my neck and looked up at him.
He's back,
she sniffled. Yeah, pup, he's back, King agreed, sounding like there was a but following that statement that he was holding back. I'm back, I muttered. But King still thinks you hugged me too long and is now hoping I fall back into a coma soon because I got to feel your fantastic tits pressed up against me. Something like that, King said. Doe rolled her eyes playfully as King pulled her off me. Because I'm a total catch right now. Nothing screams come hop on my cock like a battered body in a coma. My throat was no longer as scratchy, and it was becoming less painful to speak in longer sentences. By the way, did your tits get bigger? I asked Doe. Because I feel like they've gotten bigger. I narrowed my gaze on her tight yellow tank top. Yep, they were definitely bigger. Prep, King warned.
There's a lot to tell you,
Doe said, placing her head over King's chest.
So much has happened since...
King put his hand over hers. Before you guys say anything else, I'm going to suggest an edit, I said. A what? King asked. I held up a finger. Just follow me for a second. Instead of tiptoeing around the subject by saying I was gone, and instead of stating the obvious, like referring to it as that time I was held against my will and tortured to the verge of death over and over again at the hands of a psychopath, I'm recommending we switch it up a tad bit. Okay. As much as I'd never like to think or speak of it again, it's just not fucking realistic. And since it's fucking impossible to just not talk about it when so much of what's going on in my life right now has to do with shit that happened while I was in Narnia, you've got to be fucking kidding me. You want us to refer to your time in a hole under the MC as Narnia?
Yep, that's what I said.
King started to mumble, which made me realize that someone was missing. A very big, very shirtless someone.
Where the fuck is Bear?
I made a move to sit up, but my wrists were unable to support my weight to successfully make the transition. King bent over and lifted me up under my armpits, adjusting me into a much more comfortable, slightly reclined position. Neither King nor Doe answered my question. Instead, they looked at each other like they were having some sort of telepathic, unspoken conversation that I wasn't to have any part of.
What?
I asked.
I mean, where the fuck could Bear be that's more important? Unless, of course, he's out getting the hookers and blow, in which case I might make a small exception.
I'm right here, motherfucker.
Bear grumbled as he came into view, standing on the other side of Doe. I didn't know if he'd had been there the entire time or if he's just arrived. Either way, one thing was clear to me right off the bat.
All this time,
I said,
and you still couldn't find a motherfucking shirt?
Bear snickered and placed his hand over my forearm in the same way he always shook hands with the bikers in his club.
Welcome back, brother.
Doe and King shifted over to grant Bear more access to me. He knelt down and leaned over the bed. I missed the easy launch of insults between us. I missed everything about the stupid fucker, even that stupid, quirky smile the chicks always seemed to dig. Even the way he looked as if he was always pissed, even if he wasn't. Although a lot of times he was. I opened my eyes as wide as I could and took in my old friend's appearance for the first time in God knows how long. He looked exactly how I remembered, physically. Blonde hair, matching blonde beard, tattoos, bright blue eyes, freckles, leather cut. But in another way, he looked different. Very different.
Happier, maybe?
No fucking way. Seeing Bear happy was as likely as spotting a Yeti in the backyard. Something I had to see to believe. I couldn't dwell on the notion for too long, because in a fraction of a second, it all started to change. Bear's face morphed like a dolly painting. My smile faded from my lips as the image of my friend melted away and became something else. Someone else. It was no longer Bear smiling down at me, happy to see his long-lost friend. No. It was someone with deeper lines on his forehead and a permanent scowl on his lips. Someone whose blonde hair had changed to gray and whose freckles had faded with time. His blue eyes were no longer bright and held no signs of loyalty or brotherhood behind him. No sign of life at all. Bear was gone, and pure fucking evil was in his place. Blood-curdling screams filled the small room, echoing off the walls and through my ears. The familiar and fucking terrifying sounds of someone being brutally tortured. My vision blurred, and I faded back into the purgatory. Grateful for the escape. It wasn't until I was fully back into oblivion when I realized that those screams were mine. Chapter 4. Preppy. The dark clouds around my thoughts started to clear. Each time I woke up, the horror of what happened and the reality of where I was separated more and more from one another until I finally realized what my friends were telling me was the truth. I was free. I was safe. I was fucking alive. And best of all, Chop was fucking dead. The only thing that pissed me off was that I wasn't the one to end the cocksucker myself. The good news was that I was starting to regain some of my strength. The pains in my muscle and bones turned from sharp stabs to dull aches. The gunshot wound Chop never allowed to fully heal was finally closed, although very fucking angry looking. The skin around it was all twisted up into a kaleidoscope of distorted tattoos around a huge red hurricane-shaped scar. I called it the Hurricane of Hurt. I hated what it did to my tattoos. But that massive ugly thing was gonna earn me a shit ton of street cred. While my body was getting its shit together, Doe and King took turns filling me in on the headlines of their lives. All the shit I'd missed, like King finally getting custody of Max. I felt as if I was in an episode of Days of Our Lives when Doe told me that she had had a son who King had adopted, Then they had a new baby, and she finally had her memory back. I was positive they skimmed down on the details of the story, but I was happy with the cliff notes for the time being. And if I really needed to catch up on more details, I could just turn on the TV around 2 p.m., because I'm sure their storyline was being played out on one of the daytime channels. So, wait, I've been calling you Doe, but what the fuck is your name? I asked, pushing off the bed into a standing position.
Raimi, but I go by Ray.
Wow, I said. I knew her name wasn't really Doe, but for some reason the thought of her having a real name was still a shock.
You can call me Doe if you want, though,
she said, and I felt as if she genuinely meant it.
I feel like I have 1,000 names now, Doe, Raimi, Pup, although Mommy is kind of my current favorite.
Mine too, King added, and as if they could sense that she was speaking about them. Two little blonde kids appeared in the doorway.
Mommy, 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 Mom, Mama,
they both called. Not waiting for her to answer, just continuously repeating her name just to make sure neither of their parents kept full control of their sanity.
I take that back,
Doe amended with a smile. King ran up and scooped both kids up in his arms. They kicked their legs and squealed in delight.
Come on, you two. Let's get you some lunch. And don't wake up your little sister or your mom will...
His voice faded as he stomped down the hallway. Where the fuck is Bear? I asked, sitting up. He's the only one I hadn't seen much of. I vaguely remember him being here when I first woke up. I bent my knees, testing the limits of my joints. Everything cracked and snapped and popped like a goddamn cereal commercial, but it felt good to be standing on my own power. Doe busied herself by fluffing the pillows.
Bear sat with you a lot. He's just been really busy at the club, I'm sure. There's been a lot going on over there since he took the reins.
You mean since Bear killed Chop? I said. It's okay. You can say his name. You said the fucker's dead now, right? Doesn't matter anymore. If only that were true.
Something like that.
I wish I could have been there to see that, I said, shuffling my feet on the carpet and grabbing what furniture I could as I put more and more space between myself and the bed.
Revenge isn't everything, Preppy. All that matters is that you're here.
No, I don't wish that I was there to see Chop being killed as long as it happened. I wish I was there to see Bear getting a girl, I said, and Doe laughed. She must be something else. What's her name again?
Thea,
Doe admitted.
You'll like her.
I'm sure I will, I said, curious as to what the girl was like who made Bear want more than just a quick fuck. Because if she's anything like the girl who made you want more. Doe snapped me out from my thought.
I've brought you some clothes,
she said, diverting her eyes from the back of my hospital-style gown, which I knew was open in the back because I felt the cool air from the AC against my ass cheeks.
Are you sure you don't need any help?
She asked again. Nah, I just want to get dressed on my own, feel human again, you know, one small step for mankind and shit. Prep, King warned suddenly, appearing back in the doorway, this time minus the kids.
Seriously, boss man? I'm back from the dead and you're still gonna give me shit about Doe? I mean, in a situation like this, one pity fuck wouldn't be completely unheard of, I pointed out, fully prepared for King to sling my words right back at me. You can do and say whatever you want, Prep.
King responded in a surprisingly calm tone. Apparently, I wasn't the only one confused by his newfound Zen attitude, because Doe looked just as confused as I did. Then King smiled. And it was then I knew something wasn't right. Or maybe things have changed more than they've let on. I can? I asked, my knees cracking as they began to work again. Slowly, I shook the leg out and muscle memory took over. I was able to take a few small steps.
What's the catch? You can talk as much shit as you want to me as long as you're prepared to be dead again,
he said, pulling Doe tightly into his side.
For real this time.
I scowled.
You're not a friend. You're a monster.
I cried dramatically, taking larger and larger steps as I crossed the room. Suddenly, while doing my preppy shuffle across the pink carpet, I was hit with a flash of memory. My hands around a throat. Feminine screaming. flashes of dark hair. I paused. Was anyone else here besides you guys? When I woke up, or maybe even before? I asked.
Were you expecting someone?
King asked. No, but I've just got this weird feeling.